prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, January 9th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Unemployment drops to 5.6%. Wages fall. There's a record of almost 93 million Americans out of the workforce, and with a record number of women. We're going to be talking about that here in a little bit. And if you have any comments in reference to that, give us a call at 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. So let's go ahead and get right to the market report today. We had a good day, Al.
Yeah, I know.
Had a nice day. Good day, nice day. Up 12 bucks. Currently up 12 bucks on the New York spot price, 1221, almost 1222. Silver, almost at the top of the market today. Silver is up 9 cents at $16.57. Platinum is up $10 at $1,236, along with palladium also up 10 at $8.05. USDX today with a little bit of pressure, 0.40 at 91.92. Crude oil today down 0.48 at 48.31. And the paper markets today, they were down. Actually, the Dow was down, you know, triple digits, hit a number 160 around that level and stayed there most of the day. You had the Dow down 170 points at 17,737. The NASDAQ is down 32 at 4704. And the S&P down 17 at 2014. 10-year yield, I didn't look at that today. I didn't follow it, but it broke down 1.97. 1.97, which makes sense with 170 points down to the in the Dow, and in the markets down 0.04, 1.97% for the 10-year yield. So,
you know, when you talk about gold being up $10, $11 today, and saying it's a good day, the truth of the matter is, it's a good week.
We had a
good
week.
Gold goes up $10 a week. $2 a day. Great. That translates, $2 a day up translates into $10 a week, translates into $500 a year. Not many people would think that was a bad year. Price of gold went up $500 for the year. A lot of people say, yippee. So the point is, $10, $11, $12 a day is not, it's not just, you know, a good day. It's really an exceptional day. It's not like 30 and 40, I get that. But just the same, on a yearly basis, that's a good day. That's more than a good day. It's a really good day. So.
But with the U.S. payrolls today, non-farm payrolls, they increased 252,000 last month after an upwardly revision. 353,000 jump in November. The unemployment rate fell, as I mentioned earlier. But there was a 5 cent drop in average hourly earnings, which nearly erased any of the gains seen in November. Confusing numbers, Al? Conflicting numbers?
Mm, yeah, I mean, there's always a certain amount of that. It's conflicting hype, to my mind.
Yes.
I mean, you're always going to see a certain amount of mixture on the number. You'll generally see a certain amount. Some things are up, some things aren't up as much, some things are down a little bit. That's probably generally true. You'll see that mix. What you see, in addition to the reality, what you see are headlines that say, yay, happy days are here again. You know, it's you get the cheerleading and the hyperbole to go along with the news. And that's what makes it a little bit confusing. It's like, what the heck are you guys celebrating anyway, you know? We're getting by, and there's not much question that the economy has improved to some degree. You know, the reports I think are exaggerated, but nevertheless, there's truth behind them. But here's an example. Here's something from Kitco News, and the headline is "Americans feeling good about economy, labor market." All right, there's a survey that Americans are feeling good. Yippee. And here's the article. Well, it's just a short article. A couple of paragraphs are all. But it's the first paragraph says, ahead of the holiday season, before Christmas, Pew Research Center conducted a survey to see how Americans felt about employment and general economic news coming out of the country. For the first time, the report says 20% of Americans expressed positive views about job news since the nonpartisan fact tank started tracking this question in 2009. So the headline is Americans feeling good about the economy, but the fact is 20% are feeling good about the economy, which leaves us to wonder, what are the other 80% doing? I don't see I understand that if the number of people has increased and we'll get into this in just a moment, from 1% in 2009 to 20% today who feel good about the economy. I understand that that's positive news, but it still leaves us, you know, if one man in five says, yippee, things are getting better, what about the other four? You know, this is not just a question of whether the glass is half full or half empty. The glass is one-fifth full. It's 80% empty. All right? The article continues. It says in June of 2009, just 1% said news about the job situation was mostly good, and 71% said it was mostly bad. In 2014 alone, the share of hearing mostly bad news about jobs has fallen 15 points. Now, that means it's down from 71% to 56%, while the percentage hearing mostly good news has risen 9 points. 9 points on top of the 1 point they had back in 2009 is 10% are saying things are good. This just cracks me up. That's the third paragraph. They've gone from 1% down to 10% up. Okay? The first paragraph says it's 20% are hearing positive. third paragraph says it's 10% hearing positive, and the last paragraph says most Americans continue to say that they're hearing a mix of good and bad news. That's 63%, while 21% say they are hearing mostly bad, and 14% are hearing mostly good news. So we've got three different reports within four paragraphs on this document. One says the people hearing good news are up to 20%. The other one says they're up to 10%. The third one says it's up to 14%. And this is in four paragraphs. I don't know, Melody. I think maybe the people writing for Kitco, maybe they're the same ones who write the economic indicator reports for the federal government. What do you think?
Maybe. But there was another report out today, and it's similar, too, because it's also by the Pew Research Center. They found that 54% of those with the greatest financial security believe that poor people today have it easy because they can get government benefits without doing anything in return. But there was still a 36% of the wealthiest say that poor people have hard lives because government benefits don't go far enough to help them live decently. And of course, those struggling the most financially believe that the poor need more help by more than a 2-to-1 margin. So, you know, it's more than 60% of the well-to-do say that government can't afford to do more for the needy, while 60% of those struggling say the government should do more. Of course, if you're in that 60%, you certainly do want the government to do
more.
I'm
not guaranteed. I'm surprised. See, that's the problem with the poor. Only 60% think they need more help.
Mm-hmm.
The rich, I guarantee 100% think they need more subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
They know what's going on. Hey, we need more money. We're rich, but we need more money up here. I've never met anybody who didn't think he could use more money. I don't care if you're on welfare or you're a billionaire. Pretty much everybody thinks they could use more money. We don't need more work, thank you very much, but we could use more money.
And of course, when it comes to immigration between the two groups, there was more common ground when it came to immigration. About 65% of the rich say immigrants strengthen the country with their hard work and talent, while 27% say immigrants are a burden on the country. Most poor people surveyed agreed that immigrants had a positive impact, but a smaller margin, just 51%, while 44% of low-income respondents said immigrants had the negative impact. So, what does it all mean? It just means
it means the poor are smarter than the rich.
It really shows how split and, I mean, as far as the percentages and so forth, we're like in a 50-50 country. I mean, really. I mean, when you look at, you know, more over half of the, you know, 50% of the folks in this country receive a check from Washington, and it's like a 50-50. It's like everything is split. Everything is half. Maybe it isn't, but that's how it's being reported.
Well, it's hard to know what that means exactly, but it seems that there was a time when I was a young man and whatever, even a child, and I might not have had brains enough to perceive what was going on, but it seemed that there was a general consensus about whatever was going on in the country. It seemed to me, I had the impression, I didn't think about it per se at the time, but in retrospect, I had the impression that, you know, it was about 70-30 or 80-20. The majority was pretty clear, and we had a consensus as to what was right and what was wrong in this country. And today, you know, it's hard to put three people in the same room and see if you can get them to agree to anything.
It's not easy. Divide and conquer.
There's a certain amount of that going on. And a certain amount of this is they've been playing one side off against the other. You know, the poor sit back and say, we need more welfare. You can reasonably ask, do they need any welfare? And what I mean by that is this. I understand they're poor. I understand that it's not a bad idea to see that they get through difficult times. But once you become institutionalized in that, and you sit back and say, this is cool. I'm just letting the government support me, and I don't have to do anything but hang out with my homies. you become disabled. You become disabled where parents who are institutionalized in welfare, they don't know what it means to work anymore. And they're not going to teach any sort of work ethic to their children, or they're unlikely to. And their kids are brought up in the welfare system and they're institutionalized in it. And they don't know how to work. They can't imagine why they should. All they can sit back and say, I need a raise. I'm on welfare. I need a raise, you know? Is that really doing these people any good? Will their lives improve by the fact that they're getting handouts, or will they be permanently disabled in a way where the only thing they'll be able to ever survive on is handouts?
Well, they need those handouts. More than 3 in 5 Americans. I mean, we talked about the survey where most people couldn't afford a $400 emergency. This is sort of, you know, backing that up. But they did increase it to $500. More than 3 in 5 Americans wouldn't have money in their savings account to pay for an unexpected car repair or medical emergency. This was released by the bank rate report. Only 38% of those polled said that they could cover a $500 repair bill or a $1,000 emergency room visit with funds from their bank accounts. Most others would need to take on debt or cut back elsewhere.
We're talking 62% of the American people couldn't cover $1,000 medical emergency or $400 or $500 automobile repair without having to borrow money.
Even those with Americans who said they had a household budget, there were too few that they just can't cover the expenses outside their budget without going into debt or turning to family or friends for help.
Do you know why they have a budget, Melody? Because they don't have enough money to make ends meet. If they had an extra $1,000 a month, all right, they'd figure out a way to spend it. The budgets for the people we're talking about do not include any sort of a significant savings program.
No.
They're spending everything that comes in the door. They know they're going to be flat broke come payday, so they're trying to juggle their funds, say, well, I'm going to pay this, I'm going to pay this, and I'm going to have to put off buying that until next month or whatever. But when they're talking about budgets, for many of these people, and probably most of them, that budget does not include any savings.
Well, look, we'll look at the report. You have wages that are stagnant and going down. I mean, it's hard for, and regardless, I know you talk a lot about deflation, but hey, the things that we need and live on, those prices are going higher and higher. Sure, we have gasoline prices that are lower and so forth, but there's still a lot of things that are going higher, even hamburger. The meat that, if you can't afford steak, where do you buy? Hamburger. That's more the most expensive it's ever been per pound. So, I mean, things continue to rise in price. And this survey also found that unexpected bill would cause 26% to reduce spending elsewhere, 16% would borrow from family or friends, 12% would put an expense on a credit card.
How many would resort to mugging?
Well, that was the other that they didn't know. What they would do.
They wouldn't say. We're not.
They wouldn't say.
I'm not going to say what I would do. I can tell you one thing. Here, I live down here in Texas. I live in Dallas County, outskirts of the city of Dallas. And there are parcels of land that are still empty near where I live. And people put cattle on them. All right? They do it to get a tax break. All right? But with the price of beef, I can tell you it's tempting. You may decide to become a cattle rustler. Right down here in Dallas, Texas, you can rustle cattle in order to pay for your steaks. You don't have to buy hamburger. Just go catch a cow, lead him down the street, take him to your backyard.
Well, butcher. If you rustle a cattle, you'll have hamburger also.
Well, I don't know. You rustle a good cow. You know, you don't have to make hamburger out of them. You can just make steaks. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-387. What am I saying, Melody?
What? 1-800-375-4188. I was paying attention to you. I was thinking about Tom and Marie. During the break, we were talking about steaks.
Yep.
And I was telling Alfred about clients that we had in Colorado, Tom and Marie, and they did their own cattle, and they would bring us fillets. They would visit us, and they would bring us fillets, and he made a sausage that was just unbelievable, the best I ever had. And I always try to encourage him to sell it, because it was just the best steaks that I ever, and steaks and sausage that I ever had. So that's what we were talking about during the break, and that's what I was thinking about when you were giving out the wrong phone number, Al.
Well, I didn't give out the complete wrong phone number.
Yeah.
I just gave out an inaccurate representation of the middle three digits. And
but anyway,
in any case, it's 1-800-375-4188 for Discount Gold and Silver.
Anyway, we do have a special today. We have a tube of 20 Morgan Silver Dollars, 1921s. And in a tube, you get 20 of them. And these are 1921 Morgan Silver Dollars. 90% silver. We have quarters and dimes. $25 face value. $800. So that's a great little special for silver. We've been talking a lot about gold coins, mint state coins, and we're also going to carry that special through. Now I'm going to change it from Liberties to Saint Gaudens. These were the ones that were minted, of course, after the Liberties. Mint state 61, $20. Saint Gaudens for $1,360. And these are only $75 over what a gold eagle would cost today. So, I mean, folks, I don't know how much cheaper I can make these for you. I mean, a $75 spread, when at the very peak of the market back in 2009 and 2010, I mean, they were selling close to $1,000 over a gold bullion coin. Of the Mint State 61 $20 Liberty gold pieces that are certified by NGC or PCGS, there's only 70,000 of them to be slabbed. 61 $20 pieces, so in the St. Gaudens section. So, I mean, very limited supply. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. You can have one of the specials. You can have both of the specials. You can combine them, save yourself some shipping, but you must give us a call. 800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Well, you know, we were talking about giveaways today. Obama, I guess he was in Tennessee, and this is America's College Promise. This is his new deal where you can have 2 years of community or technical college and free. And he hopes that it will become as popular and as universal as high school.
At least he didn't hope it would become as popular as Obamacare.
You know, we do have a caller, but let me just, I don't know if we can finish this little thing that he said today and then we can go to our caller. But he did announce today it's a multi-billion dollar proposal to pay for 2 years of community college for any American, saying education should not be a privilege that is reserved for a few. Obama said the plan, which the White House estimates would cost the federal government about $60 billion over 10 years, would help the U.S. compete with other countries with a 21st century workforce. The White House's details on how the president proposes to pay for the plan will come next month. I want to make it free, he said at a community college in Tennessee, where he described such schools as a central pathway to the middle class. Community college should be free for those willing to work for it, because in America, a quality education should not be a privilege that is reserved for a few. And I do believe Tennessee also has a program similar to what he's proposing, but the state has requirements. You know, you just don't get a free handout. I mean, there's community service, and, you know, the grades you have to keep up. Yeah. I mean, there's other things that you have to do to pay back. And there's other systems out there, I believe, maybe it is Tennessee, where you actually work in order to provide your tuition. So, but what Obama says, it's just going to be free. Is anything ever free, Al?
No, somebody's paying for it. What we mean by free is you don't have to pay for it, but somebody else does. Mm-hmm. It's free for some people, and it's costly for others. But having said that, if we're going to give money away for anything in this country, education is not a bad idea. All right, I'm not necessarily, you know, if we're going to have, there's got to be something where people can get an education in this country, and without having to go so deep into debt that you'll never be able to afford to buy your own home and the rest of that sort of thing. I mean, there should be. Either that, or we have to cut the price of colleges and cut the price of college educations. But one way or another, education can't be unaffordable. And it can't be based on just going so deep into debt that you may never get out.
But I don't believe it should be free. And I believe this is also coming at a time where you have these kids now, there's no options for them.
Yeah.
I mean, some kids... Children coming out of high school, they're unable to go to college. I mean, it's a commitment they can't make, but there's no jobs for them.
Yeah, no.
So let's just send them all to school, and that way there's 2 more years we don't have to worry about them.
Well, we could just flunk them while they're in high school, and just instead of sending them to college, we'll just toughen up the standards in high school and flunk them and keep them for a couple extra years in high school. What about that?
Yeah, well, yeah, that can work.
Now it's free. We don't have any additional costs to speak of, at least not much.
I mean, I think with education comes, it has to come along with commitment and responsibility. And we've seen all of these, I mean, already the government gives out all these grants. for these kids, and they just go to school just to waste time and energy. And you know, kick those kids off the program, and then give these programs, the free education, to the kids who really want it and will make something out of it.
It's got to be kids. In the end, it probably has to be kids that did well in high school.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and they're not going to a conventional college. I don't know. Well, you know, it's one of these things that's difficult. I don't care how you figure it out. It's not going to make perfect sense to anyone. I doubt if we can do this in a way that's perfect, no matter how you think it through. But on balance, 2 years of community college isn't a bad thing. I just saw an article just today.
And it shouldn't be done by the federal government. It should be done by the states.
But if it were, it wouldn't be done by all of the states. And
because
one
I really
other question,
don't want
does this
pay.
Include illegal aliens? Will illegal aliens be able to come up here and get free 2 years of education?
Probably.
He said it's for Americans. Did he mean citizens of the United States, or did he mean citizens of North or South America? You know, in any case, we'll watch and see how it unfolds. One of those ideas that on one hand sounds good, on another, it's mixed. It's mixed. It's like they were talking about. You hear good, you hear bad at the same time. This is one of those things. It's good, it's bad.
Just like Obamacare. That was supposed to be a really good deal, too. Free, cheap, inexpensive.
You'll be able to keep... But don't forget, Melody. You'll be able to keep your existing health care provider.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see what... who's calling us right now?
Dave in Indiana.
Dave in Indiana. Let's see what Dave has to say if he's held out and waited until now. Dave, are you there?
Yes, sir. I feel as though I should apologize for you to, but yeah, my feelings on the education is we don't need really two more years of indoctrination in this transformational country that we're in already. I think to pay for that, we're going to see a lot of us in work camps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I just saw an article today about some guy who went through 2 years of a trade school after he got out of high school. Trade school, junior college. I guess it was a junior college, but 2 years. And he learned to weld. And he's making $140,000 a year working as a welder. Now, this isn't bad business, all right? If we're going to get two more years of indoctrination, I agree, that's no point to that. But if we're going to get 2 years of teaching the kinds of skills, suppose you had a 2-year program that taught you how to be a plumber or an electrician.
And that's
what not
get.
A bad no. situation in this world, because those jobs can't be exported to foreign countries.
You know, Al, I'm in full agreement there, but then I got to ask the question, what happened to the industrial arts classes and stuff that were taken out of our schools?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can start this training a lot earlier than 2 years of...
I agree with you. I agree 100%. And you could... And, you know, we've had our school system is something like 17th in the world last time I looked for statistics on it. It's a gross embarrassment. It has turned into an indoctrination camp where we're more interested in conditioning people to believe certain ideas than we are in teaching them how to think. And that's what we're not doing in school. We're teaching them what to think more than how to think, if you catch my drift. And there's a big difference on that.
Yeah, I'd feel much happier if I could hear the president say, we've been on the wrong path, going down the wrong way, we're going to step back 50 years and turn this country around and get back into, you know, production and education.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and you can have your book of wisdom put back into your schools so we can, make judgments for ourselves and the government doesn't have to think for us.
When you're talking about the book of wisdom, what are you talking about?
Oh, the Bible.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes to another point. Are we being taught any values? Values. Fundamental values. Are we getting those? Are the kids getting that in school today? I don't know, but I don't think they are. And I won't say it's necessarily just the fault of the schools. I don't know that they get it. They don't get them out of TV. They don't get them from maybe their parents. But when you don't have a consistent system of core values that pretty much everybody believes in, can you hold the economy together?
That's kind of a problem too. We're in a space here away from truth, and we're living in a subjective fairness, which is
It's like the idea of new math.
Thing.
It's like the idea of new math, which may not be. I don't even know if they're still teaching new math. It was an idea that came out perhaps 20 years ago. I don't know if that's still a fundamental subject in schooling today. I don't know if it is or it's not. But the idea was, in part, it didn't matter whether the answer you got was right or wrong. What was important is that you felt good about it, right? They were worried about people's self-esteem, and it was more important to have self-esteem than it was to be able to accurately add and subtract. And that's just stupid. You've got to be able to add and subtract, and you can't just sit back and feel good about it, regardless of what answer you get. You know, how could we come to a happy ending teaching that kind of nonsense in our schools? Children are impaired. Go ahead.
We end up at a place where it's not working out for you, so the government will reestablish the order for you, and that's the direction we're going. I don't see any changes with this whiz bang idea. I mean,
I don't see any changes. It'll help some people. I get that. It'll be exploited by some people. Question is, how many will exploit it and just take advantage of it and a free opportunity to goof off in school for another 2 years, and how many will actually buckle down like this one guy who's in the newspaper? He 2 years, and he's making $140,000 a year as a welder. You know, it's one of those things that's always been. Will you take advantage of the opportunity to be educated, or will you just, laugh and joke and party down?
Well, you can't judge the whole group, by one or so. But I'm sure almost everybody will take more than they had, if it's cost effective or not. That doesn't bother me as much as the indoctrination. The further deep rooting of a one world order in a subjective world class, why there's an upper class that have all the wealth, all the power, all the authority.
They have all the wealth, all the power.
They also get
a lot of the bills.
I got a question. I mean, already your colleges are full. I mean, it's not like there's empty spaces and people can't afford to go to college. Where are these kids going? They're going to technical schools now.
Well, some are.
They're full. The colleges are full. I mean, kids aren't going to school because they can't afford it. So,
As I recall also, isn't there $1 trillion worth of college debt floating out there now?
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
There's supposed to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 trillion, which means the college students in this country already owe as much. They're sitting on a debt for $1 trillion to government and whatever, and the banks or whatever, for college education. The debt that they owe is comparable to the number of bonds and treasuries that are being held by Red China. All right? And people say, what if China cashes all their bonds at the same time? It could collapse the economy. Yeah, probably could. What if all the college kids said, we're not going to pay the bond, we're not going to pay our college tuition or our college cost debt? How about that? They could also collapse the economy. Huh? They have as much leverage in some regards, as the Chinese do. So what are you going
to
do?
I'd like to see those shovel-ready jobs building the new factories setting up the new industry and then the 2-year colleges training the machine operators and the welders,
exactly.
You know, but getting out of the college and waiting in a welfare line isn't going to help anybody, you know.
Exactly. We need to bring those
jobs when they come out of these places.
That's right, and that's where it's lacking. I mean, these jobs aren't going to come back as long as they continue to make all these trade agreements around the world. And so.
And in the jobs, I mean, we've seen reports that they're going to bring industries. There are industries in China that find the working conditions there too difficult to continue. There's too much bribery, too much corruption. There are too many problems. And the whole thing is in a state of confusion. And there are companies that are talking about coming back to the United States. All right? But if they get back here, are they going to bring jobs back or are they going to bring robots? And the answer may be and it will be robots in many instances. We're going to stop here and take a break for some more commercials. Thank you for your call, Dave. Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from Reuters, and the headline is, Obama tells Americans, don't buy a gas guzzler. President Barack Obama told Americans on Thursday that cheap U.S. gasoline prices would not last, and that they should not buy gas guzzling vehicles. As fuel prices have dropped near 6-year lows, sales of pickup trucks and SUVs have surged. But Obama says gas prices aren't going to be lower forever. So don't start suddenly saying you don't have to worry about fuel efficiency. All right? And he's talking gas prices are down $1.10 as compared to a year ago. And he goes on, he says, if you're going out shopping for a new car, This just cracks me up. Don't think it's always going to be this low. He's talking about the price of gas, of course. Because then you'll be surprised when it goes higher. And you'll be mad at me later. And I'll be able to say, I told you, don't buy a gas guzzler because gas is going back up.
Yeah,
I'm not sure whether Obama is concerned about giving us a little bit of sound advice, or he's just trying to say, look, don't blame me. I got enough people blaming me for everything else that's going wrong. Don't blame me when the price of gasoline goes back up. It just strikes me as funny. Melody, do you have something you want to say, or shall I continue to the next article?
Well, that just tells us that oil prices will be moving up. Gasoline prices are going to be, with the lower prices, they're just going to add taxes onto it. We've already seen, you know, taxes being applied to the price of gasoline. So, yeah, there isn't anything that goes down and stays down forever. I mean, we're in a world of inflation, so you can have temporary bouts of prices going down. But, folks, as long as we have a fiat currency, you're going to have inflation until it inflates itself out. So, and when talking about inflation, Venezuela, they're having problems. They're actually going to put their grocery stores under military protection because the people, there's shortages. So they're using the military protection for their food distribution. There's long lines, some stretching for blocks that have formed outside these grocery stores, as they just look for some very basic items as chicken and soap, detergents, and there's people that are sleeping overnight. They're going to store to try to find this, and you've had a lack of foreign currency that's been made worse by the collapsing oil prices that have led to these shortages of imports, anywhere from toilet paper to car batteries. And, of course, it all helped push their annual inflation up to 64% in November. And these lines will persist as long as they have price controls that remain. And what's interesting is, I mean, this was the country that their oil accounts for 95% of the country's exports. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know that it's plunged by more than half from last year's peak in June for the price of oil. And this is the first time in its 100-year history of oil production that Venezuela is importing crude. I found that interesting.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. A country that used to export crude can't export, but is now forced to import?
Imports. The nations, we all know Hugo Chavez, often boasted the South American country regained control of its oil industry. But 19 months after his death, the country can't pump enough commercially viable oil out of the ground to meet domestic needs. This dilemma comes as the prices of U.S. pumps, we fall below $3 per gallon. And
What it means is the government is so broke it can't subsidize pumping. Once they nationalize the oil, it's up to the government to come up with the money to pay to pump it out of the ground. The government's too broke to do it, or at least that's one implication.
And not only that, we imported oil from Venezuela, about 1.5 million barrels a day, and that has dropped to 800,000. Barrels a day as a result of a deal where Venezuela borrowed money from China that was repayable only in oil. So, found that very interesting.
Well, the whole thing is shaky and surprising, shocking even. And I doubt that any of us understand what the implications of this will be. But here's an article from the Fiscal Times. And their headline, while Obama's saying don't buy any gas guzzlers, they're saying their headline is why oil prices are headed below $35 a barrel. I mean, that's just astonishing. And they get in, it's the oil is down nearly 57% from the summertime high of $107, almost $108 a barrel. We are down in the 40s right now, the high 40s. New estimates from Bank of America Merrill Lynch put the short-term floor somewhere below $35 a barrel. They think the price is dropping below $35. We're in the 40s and saying, oh my gosh, it's astonishing we're below 50. They think it's going down below 40. All right? A drop that would represent a decline of nearly 30% from here. We've already lost 57% from where it was in summer. And if we calculate now, we're not taking 57% plus 30%, but we're saying given the price we have today, we're talking another 30% fall in the price of crude oil. Option traders are starting to place bets that prices could fall into the $20 range in the months to come. It's clear that a quick reversal isn't coming. OPEC is showing steely resolve in its efforts to recapture market share from U.S. shale oil producers. Saudi Arabia is best positioned to turn down the taps, but appears to have spearheaded the oil price war in the first place for both financial and geopolitical gains. Comments from Saudi oil minister Ali Naimi says that prices as low as $20 a barrel would be tolerated. Suggests Riyadh, despite some palace intrigue surrounding poor health of King Abdullah, is enjoying the spectacle. They go on, well, the Merrill Lynch analysts note that 50, and this is interesting. All right, well, first point, for the moment, it appears that Saudi Arabia in particular and OPEC in general are not going to restrict production. And that means prices will continue to fall. And then they get down. All right. Now, but there's a question. Even though they say we're not going to restrict production, we can wonder if they're telling the truth or if this is just a bluff. Maybe volume is going to be dramatically diminished in February. Who knows? They might have a meeting and decide, no, we're going to cut production by 30%. All right, across the board for OPEC nations, Saudi Arabia and OPEC nations, what would that mean to prices? Well, at least prices wouldn't fall anymore, and they'd probably start going back up. But the problem is demand. All right, that's part of the problem. And they say Europe has stalled, Japan is picking up the pieces from its recent sales tax hike, and China is trying to control its runaway housing and fixed asset investment bubbles. They're saying that major economies are not in a position to increase demand. And they make a very interesting, they offer a very interesting insight here from Merrill Lynch. Bank of America Merrill Lynch analysts note that 50% of the global oil demand growth in the last decade has come from oil producing countries. Right? The increase in the demand that we saw over the past decade for crude oil and gasoline, half of it came from the countries that are producing it. Now, if they're going broke because not enough people are buying crude oil and gasoline, if these oil-producing countries are going broke now and they were responsible for half the growth in the global demand for crude oil over the last decade, how are we going to repair this situation? It would be different if we said, well, the Western world, Europe and United States were responsible for most of the growth over the last 10 years, the growth in demand. But we're saying 50% of the growth was actually in the need for crude oil was from the countries from OPEC, essentially, and Saudi Arabia. They accounted for 50% of the demand, and they're going broke. So we can see that 50% of the demand for the last decade, it's not going to be easily assumed. Who's going to replace that growth? If the price is down, those oil-producing countries can't generate the same level of growth in the demand for crude oil that they have over the past 10 years. All of this points to a problem that's going to persist for a while. Obama says don't bother buying a gas guzzler, and he's probably right. I agree that that's probably right. But when he talks about, the low prices are going to go away, and then people are going to be angry at Obama, He doesn't want to be blamed for it, so he's saying, don't blame me, I'm telling you. But even if the price goes up again, one of the analysts estimate that any response on the demand side, if demand increased significantly on a global basis, there'd probably be a six-month lag before it showed up in prices, which implies that we're going to see low prices for gasoline if these analyses are correct. We're going to see low prices for crude oil and for gasoline for at least another 6 months. We might see it throughout the year of 2015. Hard to say how far this is going to go, how long it's going to last, but, you know, it's one of those things where you sit back and say, what are the consequences? This is not just time to sit back and say, yay, I can fill the gas tank for next to nothing. It costs me $20 instead of $50 to fill my gas tank. That's cause for celebration for a lot of people. It's been cause for celebration. But you have to wonder, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? What are the consequences going to be? And a lot of people say, yeah, this is good. We have more money. I have more take home. But other people are sitting back and watching. Yeah, but what about the derivatives? What about the junk bonds that were issued by oil-producing companies? There are financial consequences that are springing out of this. There's going to be companies that are going out of business. And when they go out of business, their bonds are going to be worthless. And the people that invested in oil shale-producing companies are going to be exposed to greater risk and a higher probability of default on whatever loans they made to these oil-producing companies. They're not going to be able to pay. They're going to lose their money. Derivatives are going to be triggered. What's going to happen? We have a domino-like world, and oil is certainly one of the big dominoes. And it's not just when one of them we see, hey, yay, the domino is tipping. Well, yeah, that's cause for celebration, right? This moment, in a sense, we get cheaper gasoline, but it's going to tip another domino and another one and another one. How far will these dominoes go before all of a sudden people say, wait a second, this might not be cause for so much celebration? I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I want to thank all of you for listening. We will be back on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.